We thank you for taking the time to listen to this teaching from Metro Church. We hope this inspiring message will empower and enrich your life.
So, the title of today's message is Setting Proper Defaults. Now, it has a subtitle, too. My wife, you can hear her over there. Only if you're live. You can't hear her on the web. If you want to meet her. No. She comments sometimes on how I always seem to relate everything back to the trumpet. And my subtitle today is, or how following Jesus is a lot like playing the trumpet. I told her this last night, and she found it rather humorous. Well, we're going to start with some scripture, if that's okay. It's always a good place to start, I think. In Matthew chapter 12, verses 33 to 35, and the words are in red in my text. They're in white here, but trust me, this is Jesus. And this is Jesus talking, and he says, make a tree good, and its fruit will be good. Or make a tree bad, and its fruit will be bad, for a tree is recognized by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, who are evil, say anything good? A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. So I'm really happy to report that I'm still improving as a trumpet player and as a musician, which is not something I take for granted. Maybe about a decade or so, I actually started to wonder if maybe I'd peaked. You know, I was in what some people would call the middle age, and I think I'm still there, whatever that is. But it didn't seem to me that there was much way for me to make much more headway, and frankly, no matter what Tom Brady seems to think, these bodies are not built to last forever. Maybe to your 45, I suppose, if you're on the football field, we'll see. But, you know, that's a good thing. We don't want these bodies to last forever. I mean, we kind of do, because that's just, we're here now and we're comfortable with this. But, you know, how often in God are we so focused on something that's good that he's given us that we can't let go and actually see something better? There are better bodies waiting for us. And I want the better body. But in the meanwhile, I'm trying to do what I can with this one. And I'm, as I said, I'm happy to say that it turned out my fears were not yet realized, that I have not reached the top of what I'm doing. And as I continue to become better at what I'm doing, I feel like I'm a better trumpet player than I was then. I'm a better performer, which is not necessarily the same thing, by the way. And I think I'm a better teacher. I'm trying to be. I've realized, though, that a lot of what makes me better at these things are actually biblical principles. In other words, what I do in life is actually a reflection of what happens in the spiritual realm. My increasing success in the physical act of trumpet playing is due to increasing the tweaking of and relying on what I call defaults, default processes. And because I use these defaults, I always feel the same, whether I'm in the practice room, whether I'm rehearsing, whether I'm in my teaching studio, or even when I'm performing, and even for like a very big event where a few people are watching, like July 4th. I'm told a few people perceive that I was there on TV, and that kind of thing. Again, that's where the difference between being just a good trumpet player and a good performer becomes very critical, because you become a very good trumpet player and fold when you perform. I've been figuring this out. I'm happy to say, but it's because I do some things very, very consistently. I set defaults. So every time I do something on the trumpet, it feels the same way and it responds the same way. So then I don't have to worry about what's going to come out. So setting a default in this way refers me back to verse 35 in the passage we just read a minute ago. Verse 35 says, a good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him. So The first question in this regard is, how does the good get stored up in somebody? So I'm going to relate this to the trumpet. I lead warm-up classes twice a week at Boston University for my students, Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Thursdays at 7. So, if I could find one of my trumpet students in here to ask, you look like one of my trumpet students there in the front row. What's the first thing that we do in warm-up class every time? A for the day. Breathing. Now you're like, well, breathing, that's like the first thing you should be doing like every day anyhow, right? But you might not be breathing like we breathe. We all go around the room and we all choose two or three numbers. And then we've got a metronome going. And for the first number, we inhale for that many counts. And then the second number, we hold the breath for that many counts. And the third number, we get rid of it. So it's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, you know, and get rid of it. And yeah, it's silly. You should come to our warm-up class sometime. Thursday at 7, it's usually not quite as well attended. And you can be silly with us. But this is the fuel of the trumpet. You can't play a wind instrument or a brass instrument without air. And the next thing we do, so we always do that. We always, 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 always do that. Every time. And the next thing we do is we take this thing called the mouthpiece, and we take that air we've been using, and we put it through the mouthpiece. How exciting. Isn't that wonderful trumpet sound? You may perceive we're not quite there yet. And that's fine, because we build little by little, step by step. And after a while, that air gets energized enough to create a little bit of a sound. And once that's happened, and we keep that energy going, and after we've made that sound on the mouthpiece for a little while in various ways, then we start doing it on the trumpet. But it's always the same. And we may not do everything exactly always the same, but we're going to accomplish all the same things all the time. We're setting defaults. It can't get much simpler than this in brass playing, which is good because we're trumpet players after all. We're not rocket scientists or chemists. So why do we start this way every time? because when we start adding all the complexity of all the things that we're going to try to do on the trumpet, like that stuff that was happening over there a little while ago, we often forget to do these basic things because we're so caught up in all those other things, and the trumpet starts becoming very difficult to play. And in my teaching, I stress reinforcement of basic, easy things over and over and over and over again until they become consistent no matter what. What does this have to do with life? Hopefully you're starting to connect a few dots already. We need to set defaults in our lives. We need to adjust them and tweak them. What will you do consistently no matter what the situation you're in? So is it possible that maybe Jesus had a few defaults? Let's find out. How about the fourth chapter of Matthew? And we'll see if he exhibits any default behaviors. So in Matthew chapter 4, verse 1, that should have said then. I typed that wrong, and yeah. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. "If you are the Son of God," he said, "throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone." Jesus answered him, "It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you, he said, if you will bow down and worship me. Jesus said to him, Away from me, Satan, for it is written, Worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him. So, y'all are watching kind of closely, right? You maybe have caught something here. That Jesus had a standard way of dealing with temptation. He had a default setting for how he would deal with temptation. It is written, it is also written, ooh, got a little fancy there, you know, that's because the devil said it is written. Jesus is like, oh, yeah, yeah, what? Here's one. It's also written, and it is written. It is written, it is written, it is written, it is written. It is, what would happen in our lives if when we had temptation come after us, we had a default, oh, psh, it is written. It didn't matter what came up to try to knock Jesus off his track. He didn't, like, suddenly start wondering what to do. Oh, golly, okay, so he said this. Now, should I jump to the right to avoid that temptation? Should I duck? No, it is written. He didn't suddenly start wondering what to do. He, a good man, brought the word, good things, out of the good stored up in him. This suggests that perhaps we need to do some storage work ourselves. Psalm 119, verse 11, says, I have hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. Joshua 1:8 says, Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will become prosperous and successful. The more that we consistently ingest, digest God's word, the more we'll begin acting consistently on its principles. And the more that the words that we speak will align with the words that he has spoken. The more consistently we commune with God in prayer, the more we'll begin thinking consistently with his nature. The more our actions will express his heart. The best part about all this, you know, storing up is that we're not even going to have to think about how to line up with him if we do this. We'll just do it. Jesus didn't have to think twice about it is written. He just said it. And the temptation went away. So, we have breathing habits. Defaults on the trumpet. Another default that I've put into my playing is to use flow rather than force. So oftentimes you might hear some loud high playing on a trumpet. You might have heard some recently. And you'd be sitting there thinking, as I did when I was very young, wow, that must be really strenuous. And I can assure you that it's definitely not a walk in the park. On the other hand, when it's approached intelligently, dare I say, with flow and release of the sound, it's a lot easier than I thought it was. So, for instance, I've got this other trumpet over here. Everybody likes this little trumpet here. This is the piccolo trumpet. You can see it's about half the size, more or less, of the regular trumpet I play, and it's built to play very high register kind of things. So it's half the size of this. It's got a smaller pipe on it, and if I try to blow this and force this the way that I might be able to do that, it's going to be it's doable, but it can be very, very difficult. Nobody wants to hear that. I have to apologize to you for even demonstrating that. But it was in my notes I was supposed to demonstrate. So that's what a trumpet can sound like when you're forcing and you're not flowing. Now, as a way of making it up to you, maybe I'll try that again with some flow. That's a little more like it, right? That result is not the result I used to get. When I was closer to Peter's age, I didn't play it exactly like that first time, but I played it a lot more like that first time. I thought, you know, this is what it takes to do this. It takes a lot of struggle. It takes a lot of strain. It takes a lot of tension, because this is hard work, you know. And I thought this because I saw players, Maynard Ferguson, you know, you'd see him, you know, get up there with his trumpet and do. And, you know, he didn't have to do that. It was certainly a way of making people think that what he did was difficult, which oftentimes will get people to throw more money at you, you know, so that's a good thing. But it also, unfortunately, raises a whole generation of trumpet players like me that think that, you know, somehow I've got to be like a facial weightlifter in order to play the trumpet. And I worked hard at that for a long time. And, oh, it hurt. It was so hard. So that's my trumpet life. Anybody here ever feel like you're working hard like that? At living, trying to be a follower of Jesus, that life is hard, that I've got to try to do this, okay? I mean, if nobody else will admit it, you know, here's one right here. So Jesus had some advice. He still has it, by the way. It's in Matthew 11, 28 to 30, and I think we should heed this. Jesus says, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." In Isaiah chapter 40, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. "Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." When things are working well in our walk with the Lord, there's a certain feeling of effortless flow, even when we're busy. How do I know this? Well, as always happens when I'm asked to preach, the world says, you know, maybe we'd like to not have him preach so well. So let's fill up his schedule. And my schedule just kind of exploded. In the last week, I've played 2 concerts with the Boston Pops, been involved in 4 3-hour rehearsals, coached 2 student ensembles, accomplished my usual teaching schedule and faculty meeting schedule, plus 2 extra students, sent over 60 emails, and got my teeth cleaned. Through all of that, I know that God loves his people enough that if I'm going to be his vessel in the pulpit, he'll see me through for your sake. And it'll be easier for him if through that time I'm not struggling and worrying. So as I got busy, I would not have chosen to get busy like that. But I know that God's got this. His yoke is easy. His burden is light. It's got to be his word, not mine. If it's mine, then everybody should just go out to the Metro Cafe right now. And just, please, everybody, no. If it's God, then he's going to flow. And even when you're really busy, even when you're going through it, you can find rest. And you can know. I mean, through all those things I did, I was accomplishing things. And things that are accomplished for my career because I've given my career to him are things I'm accomplishing for the kingdom. Those 60 emails I emailed for the kingdom. But seriously, it is. When you're in a period of struggling in your Christian walk, you know, just refer back to what we mentioned in the first point about staying in the word and staying in prayer, and then just leave it in his hands and flow, knowing that he wants you to find rest for your soul. It's worth mentioning as along this lines of forcing. I had an episode, and I can't remember if I've ever mentioned this in the past in the sermon or not, but I had an episode years ago in Philadelphia that kind of illustrates the advisability of not forcing things in your Christian walk. In the late 80s in Philadelphia, a group of us walked out of church having heard a really amazing and fiery message on evangelism. We hopped in one of my friend's cars, happened to be Lori. We were just friends back then, weren't married yet. But a bunch of us set out into the heart of Fairmount Park in Philadelphia to save the world. And the piece of the world, by the way, we can't save the world. You can't. God, you can be used for it, but remember who's actually doing the saving, right? Well, I decided to work on a young couple that was on a park bench. And they were, shall we say, extremely interested in each other. Maybe not quite as interested as I was hoping they'd be in having somebody come around to save them. And no matter how good the news we were sharing, it just really wasn't, making much headway. And after a few minutes of persistence on our part, the young man walked away and left the young lady there. And so it seemed like perhaps she was starting to be a little bit receptive to what we had to say. And then in the middle of something I was saying, all of a sudden my worldview kind of went suddenly this way. And it wasn't really voluntary. It's because the young man had returned to the scene fist first into the side of my face. The evangelism session was completed for the time being. In the interest of preserving the peace, and I have to say that flow and sensitivity to the Spirit may have been a better option that day than trying to force things. If you're trying to force things, even when you think you might be doing the right thing, if you're trying to force it, you might be feeling that tension, and you need to be asking God, stay in touch and say, I thought this was the right thing, but, the Spirit moves in us to say, hey, and eventually, hey. So flow with the Spirit, relax. A third default process that I use is to keep my focus on the result that I want rather than on the problems or the obstacles in my playing. I saw an interview recently with the late great Morris Murphy. Now, none of you likely will recognize his name, but I guarantee within like 99.99% that you've all heard him play, because he was the principal trumpet on the first six Star Wars movies, Superman, Raiders of the Lost Ark. He was principal trumpet of the London Symphony during all of these. In the interview with him, he was asked how he managed to sound so musical in his playing. And his answer was essentially that he simply played how he heard the music go in his head, based on his background of playing melodies. He didn't think about high notes or fast notes or how hard something was, because anybody who started to play a trumpet and tried to play some of those things from Star Wars or Superman or whatnot knows these are also not a walk in the park. They're more like a walk in the park where you get, anyhow. Mixing my metaphors now. He didn't think about those things. He just played. And my best playing has always been the same way. And I always would get myself into tight spots in my playing when I started trying to avoid problems rather than just envisioning the outcome that I desired. And I endeavor to make all my teaching this way, to get students to think more about what they're trying to do than what they're trying to avoid. This is in stark contrast to my teaching style early in my career, which was frankly terrible. I should refund a lot of people's money from like 20 years ago. We teach people, if we're not careful, don't do that. Okay, and again, if you got a kid about to run out into traffic, that's a good thing to say. Okay, but for the most part in trumpet, nobody generally dies playing the trumpet. You're about to hit that, or don't do that. No, we need to think about what the goal is and keep our eyes that way. But, you know, we treat others that same way sometimes. We try to get them fixed so they can come to Jesus. And just as bad, we treat ourselves the same way. We beat ourselves up for missing the mark instead of going to him. The thing is, Jesus didn't treat anyone that way himself. He ate with tax collectors. He talked to adulteresses. He allowed a harlot to wash and anoint his feet. I'm not saying that sin in lives doesn't matter. It absolutely separates us from God when we don't repent and ask his forgiveness. What I am saying is that our propensity to sin, the drive that we tend to struggle with so much, is really reduced when we put our focus on Jesus rather than the sin we're trying to avoid. Anybody here drive in the rearview mirror? Please stay off the road when I'm there. You know, looking at the, oh, I should have turned left back there, I see. You know, in the meanwhile, there's a telephone pole, you know, right here, and you're going 60. We don't want to be focusing on our mistakes and our errors. We want to focus on Jesus. Hebrews 12 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The same way that I find that my bad trumpet habits drop away when I keep my focus on the product I want, I also find that sinful tendencies in me and urges in me tend to drop away when I'm looking at and when I'm moving toward God. The final verse of that last passage is the last default setting I'll mention today about relating playing trumpet to following Jesus. There could be many, many more. There won't be. Unless, you know, he asked me to speak again, and then, you know, get ready for round two. But that last point, don't grow weary and lose heart. I've been working out a lot this semester on a recumbent bike where you can kind of, you know, just sit there and pedal and pedal and pedal, and I'll put my I'll put this tablet up and have earphones and be listening and watching videos about trumpet. And there's these videos called Brass Chats, and these guys are interviewing great brass players from all over the country and all over the world. And they talk about their methods of playing. They talk about their career trajectories. And one after another has said they've been successful simply because they kept at it. Even when things didn't seem to be going well for them, they just kept at it. We need to keep at it. We need to stay in the Word. We need to stay in prayer. We need to stay in flow. We need to keep our eyes on Jesus continually, even when, and especially when, we're not progressing the way we want to progress. You know, sometimes we just think so many things are wrong. You know, and we gotta fix all these things. We have to struggle and we have to work. And you know, and it's, I'm not saying it's always easy, but something that that our founding pastor, Pastor Don, has mentioned a number of times is you turn a big ship slowly. You know, you don't take a battleship and it's going this way and it's going north, and then in 2 seconds you're going west. You know, that's what we call capsizing. Results don't come immediately, but with patience, we see the progress. And I would like to encourage all of you to consider how the best practices in your area of work and life intersect with what you read in the Bible. We're not called to live differently, to be different people in here and out there. I'm not a split personality. I'm one person. I act and I do the things. I'm the same person here as I am out there. And when you start to try to look for these ways that your life and your faith intersect, because they do, you'll start finding more and more ways in which that what you do for a living starts calling you back to Jesus. As you're doing something on your job, you're thinking, oh, this reminds me of that thing in the Bible this way. I think a lot of people go to work, and work is work. You know, I do that, and then I hang out with friends, and friends are friends. But no, there, I mean, God is in all, with all, through all our lives. And we don't want to just put him in a box and say, okay, here's my Sunday morning God box for 9:22 or 11:22. And your earthly vocation, what you do in life, becomes more and more an expression of your spiritual calling. You know, and, you know, it can seem more special for me in some ways for folks because I do music. And music is something that God created and that God has given us in order to give back to him in worship. And in a way, that makes it somewhat special, but there's actually nothing that he's given us that isn't meant to be given back to him. And when you give it back to him, you give it in worship, so that when you're on your job, you know, and you're writing that 35th email of the day, you're worshiping him. You know, you're giving it, if, you know, if you can put yourself in that spot. And when you're in that spot all the time, that's a really nice place to be, because again, where are your eyes? Not here on the things that I'm struggling with. They're on God, and your focus is there. If living in a flow with peace in your heart resonates with you, maybe it's a longing for something you've been seeking, that can be yours this morning, no matter where you are or what you've done.
We hope you have enjoyed this teaching from Metro Church. For more information about Metro Church, please visit our website at www.metro-church.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter.